Welcome back, everyone, to the Deep Dive.
It's great to be back.
So in our last Deep Dive, we started to scratch the surface of personal development within organizations, you know. We took a look at the overall structure and kind of the strategy behind it.
Yeah, sort of setting the stage, I guess.
Exactly. But today, we're taking it a step further.
Yeah, we're going deeper.
We're going to really get into the nuts and bolts of this process.
Absolutely. We're diving into the need analysis phase. It's all about figuring out what kind of development is actually needed, not just throwing stuff at the wall and seeing what sticks.
Right. And for this, we're continuing our exploration of the Handbook of Personnel Development. This time, we're focusing specifically on Chapter 4, which really digs deep into need analysis.
Yeah, this chapter gives us a really practical framework to understand how organizations can identify their current needs and then, even more importantly, anticipate what they'll need in the future, both for the organization as a whole and for the individual employees.
So this is really about getting a clear picture of where the gaps are, where the organization needs to grow, and what kind of development will help people thrive in their roles.
Exactly. It's about aligning individual growth with the overall goals of the organization.
Awesome. So why don't we jump right into the chapter overview? The chapter starts by setting the scene, right? It talks about how markets, companies, and their employees are all influenced by these big, powerful forces, things like digitalization, which is, you know, the increasing reliance on technology. Then we have the move towards decarbonization. That's the big shift towards sustainable practices and reducing our carbon footprint. And then, of course, there's the whole issue of demographics, the changing makeup of the workforce. It highlights that even before the pandemic, demographics was already a major factor in shaping strategic personnel planning.
Yeah, absolutely. The chapter really emphasizes that these large-scale trends have a huge impact. And if you think about it, even pre-pandemic, companies were dealing with an aging workforce. You know, lots of baby boomers heading towards retirement. That means they had to think about how to transfer all that knowledge and experience to the next generation.
Right, like succession planning, making sure there's a smooth transition as people move on.
Exactly. So even back then, companies were investing in mentorship programs, apprenticeships, knowledge transfer initiatives. All of these things were really a direct response to those shifting demographics.
And then, boom, the pandemic hit.
Right, everything changed.
The chapter talks about how companies had to adapt really quickly.
Yeah, they had to change their work processes practically overnight, embrace digital solutions like never before.
Zoom meetings became the new norm.
Exactly. And they had to laser focus on their core functions, the things that were absolutely essential to keep the lights on.
Right. It feels like that period really accelerated some of the existing trends we were talking about, like digitalization. And maybe even created some new ones.
Absolutely. I mean, think about remote work. It went from being a perk offered by a handful of companies to the standard operating procedure for huge swaths of the workforce. And what's interesting is that the chapter suggests this shift might not be temporary.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it seems like the pandemic might have triggered a more fundamental shift in how we work, especially for knowledge workers, the people who primarily work with information and ideas. It's moving us away from that traditional model where everyone needs to be physically present in the office 5 days a week.
And that brings us to the role of HR in all of this.
Yeah. How does HR adapt to this new world of work?
Exactly. The chapter hints that the traditional way HR has operated, you know, with established routines and procedures might not be cutting it anymore. It sounds like HR needs to be much more adaptable, more agile in this constantly changing environment.
I think that's a really key takeaway. The chapter really pushes this idea that HR needs to evolve. It has to move away from being primarily reactive and administrative.
Like just processing paperwork and handling payroll.
Right. It needs to become much more proactive and strategic. And that means being a key messenger for employees, really understanding what their needs are in this new landscape.
Yeah, it's not enough to just sit in an office and wait for people to come to you with their problems.
No, you have to be out there talking to people, listening to their concerns, understanding the challenges they're facing. But it's not just about being a voice for the employees. HR also needs to be a strategic partner for the business units.
So connecting the dots between what employees need and what the organization needs to achieve its goals.
Exactly. It's about making sure the development initiatives are aligned with the overall strategy of the company.
So it's about thinking ahead, anticipating what skills employees will need in the future to stay competitive.
Yeah, and it's about identifying potential skill gaps that might be emerging because of new technologies or changes in the market, even if employees aren't explicitly voicing those concerns yet.
That's interesting. So how does HR even go about figuring out what those employee needs are in this constantly changing environment? The chapter mentions the importance of networking and even leveraging internal social networks.
Yeah, that's a really important evolution. HR professionals can't just rely on those traditional methods anymore.
Like annual performance reviews.
Exactly. Those are still valuable, but they might not give you the full picture. HR needs to be more active, more engaged.
More embedded in the organization.
Exactly. Building relationships, talking to people in different departments, understanding the challenges they're facing. And then there's the whole idea of leveraging internal social networks.
Like company intranets or online forums where employees can connect and share ideas.
Exactly. Those platforms can provide really valuable insights into what employees are thinking, what they're struggling with, what kind of development they're looking for.
So it's about tapping into those informal channels to get a better sense of the pulse of the workforce.
Absolutely. And that leads us to the individual employee level, right? Because the chapter points out that figuring out an employee's specific development needs isn't a purely objective process. There's a subjective element to it as well.
Right. It's not just about ticking boxes on a skills checklist.
No, it's much more nuanced than that.
Yeah.
The chapter really digs into the inherent difficulty in objectively assessing an individual's development needs.
Because everyone has their own unique set of skills, experiences, and aspirations.
Exactly. And it's not just about identifying where they might have knowledge gaps or skills deficits. It's also about understanding their career goals, their own perceptions of their strengths and weaknesses, and the potential that the organization sees in them.
So it's about trying to find that sweet spot where the individual's goals and aspirations align with the organization's needs and future direction.
Yeah, and the chapter highlights that sometimes those two perspectives don't always perfectly match up.
Right, and that's where things can get a little tricky.
Absolutely. The chapter mentions that ideally, employees should be able to assess themselves accurately, maybe with the help of some objective tools and feedback mechanisms. But it also acknowledges the very real possibility that things like the desire for a promotion or a higher salary can sometimes influence how people perceive their own development needs.
Oh, yeah. It's easy to see how those kinds of motivations could come into play.
Right. Employees might overemphasize their proficiency in certain areas or prioritize development in areas they think will lead to those tangible rewards.
Even if those aren't necessarily the areas where they need the most development or where the organization needs them to focus their energy.
Exactly. So how do you bridge that potential gap? How do you align those two perspectives? The chapter calls this a significant learning process for the employee. It's about helping them gain a more realistic understanding of their strengths and weaknesses within the context of the organization's needs.
So it's a two-way street. The employee needs to be open to feedback and willing to adjust their self-perception. And the organization needs to provide clear guidance and support to help them develop in the right areas.
Absolutely. It's about open and honest communication, regular feedback, and utilizing more objective assessment methods alongside that self-reflection.
Right. It's not just about gut feelings and personal opinions.
No, you need data. You need evidence to support those development decisions.
And the chapter also raises this interesting point that sometimes an employee's development needs might simply not be something that the current company can realistically offer.
Yeah. And that can be a tough pill to swallow for both sides.
For the employee who might have to look for opportunities elsewhere to achieve their goals, and for the organization that might lose a valuable employee.
Exactly. But it's important to recognize that reality. Sometimes it's just not a good fit.
Right. And it's better to acknowledge that than to try and force something that's not going to work in the long run.
Absolutely. And then the chapter makes this really interesting connection between employee development and Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Oh, right. That pyramid that shows the different levels of human needs.
Exactly. And it places self-actualization, which is that drive to grow and fulfill one's potential, pretty high up on that pyramid.
So it's saying that once those more basic needs are met, things like safety, security, belonging, then development becomes a key driver for people.
Exactly. Once you feel secure and connected, you start looking for ways to grow and learn and reach your full potential.
So it's not just about getting a paycheck or having a stable job. It's about finding meaning and purpose in your work.
Absolutely. And that's why investing in employee development is so important. It's not just a nice perk. It's essential for attracting and retaining top talent.
Because people want to work for organizations that are invested in their growth and development.
Exactly. It shows that you value your employees and that you're committed to helping them reach their full potential.
So to kind of wrap things up, it seems like this chapter on need analysis is really emphasizing that effective personal development isn't about just implementing generic training programs. It's about having a deep understanding of the specific needs of the organization and the individuals within it.
I think that's a great way to sum it up.
Yeah.
This chapter really challenges us to move beyond those traditional one-size-fits-all approaches to development.
It's about being strategic, being proactive, and being responsive to the ever-changing needs of the workforce.
Absolutely. And it's about recognizing that need analysis is an ongoing process. It's not something you do once and then forget about.
Right. You have to constantly be evaluating, adjusting, and refining your approach.
Exactly. And that's what makes it so challenging, but also so rewarding.
Well, this has been a fascinating deep dive into the need analysis phase of personal development. And for those of you who are interested in continuing this journey, the next chapter in the book is right there waiting for you.
And that's where we'll be heading in our next deep dive. We're going to unpack the key insights from that chapter and explore how it all fits together.
So until then, keep learning, keep growing, and keep diving deep.
See you next time.
See you then.